Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 382 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk about some comic books. It's been a busy week in the world of comic books.
Yes. There's much stuff in comic books. You can read them, too, I hear.
You know, we don't even talk very much about, like, the TV or the movie side of things. And I know the Oscar nominations came out. And I guess there was nominations in there for Logan. And Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff, but...
Right, but it's always the side stuff. It's never, like, best actor. It's always, like, hey, you know, sound editing.
But, hey, and that's still cool, you know? You could put that on a DVD re-release or something.
But Logan is one of the big ones this time. It's like, original screenplay. So
oh,
that's
really?
Important.
Wow.
Yeah, something with this, like, writing. That's what it is. That actually blew me away when I saw that for Logan. Like, I always expect, like, special effects for big-budget summer movies, but I think it really was, like, best adapted screenplay or original screenplay. It was one or the other, which maybe was adapted because I think it's based on more on Old Man Logan. But you're faster on the draw with the keyboard, so you might know that.
I am. I do see here that The Shape of Water, the new Guillermo del Toro movie, got like 13 nominations.
The Abe Sapien movie?
The Abe Sapien movie.
That he just had leftover stuff from when he was doing Hellboy?
I thought it was his Creature from the Black Lagoon gimmick.
Sure it was. Sure it was. You're telling me that wasn't the Abe Sapien origin movie? And he just tweaked it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I still want to see it.
I do too. I saw Three Billboards the other day.
Oh, so you did?
That was amazing. Makes me want to see that in Bruges, which I've never seen.
Again, we're not even into comic book stuff here, but for as is my understanding, don't watch any like trailers or anything for it.
For In Bruges, you mean?
In Bruges, because the way that the movie was marketed and what the movie actually is are two completely different things.
Oh, that will come up on certain aspects of After Dark in the future. But yes, I hate when a movie is completely like just advertised and stuff like that.
Right.
But I remember seeing the trailers years ago for In Bruges and really wanting to see it. So just the idea of me wanting to see it is in my brain, and then realizing that this is the guy who did the Three Billboards, I'm like, that's all I need. I'm gonna sit down and watch it at some point. You know what I mean?
I think where it comes in is he also did something else.
He hasn't done much. I looked up his IMDb, and there's not much.
There was a reason that it was marketed the way that it was. It may have been that it came out around the time of like some sort of other maybe Colin Farrell movie.
Right.
So they just decided to market it in a similar way.
Okay.
And I understand the other movie he did, Seven Psychopaths, is really good as well. But I don't get a chance to watch many movies.
Mm-hmm.
I did see The Disaster Artist.
I never saw The Room, so...
Disaster Artist is just okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Three Billboards is amazing.
All right. Like, I have a couple of them on... I have a couple of them in my queue. As you know, I'm on the Academy voting board, so I get the screeners.
Mm-hmm.
I have Coco still to watch, the Gilbert Gottfried documentary, even though that wasn't nominated, Molly's Game.
I don't know that one.
Molly's Game, I think you would enjoy. It's about a girl who ends up being a dealer at the high stakes poker games of your Hollywood elite.
Oh, I heard about this. Now that I think about it, she was like the most dangerous person in Las Vegas at some point.
That was how it was marketed.
But actually, I thought when you said it was Molly's Game, she and dealer, I thought it was like dealing Molly is
no.
what you. But,
And then like I said, Disaster Artist, like I said, Shape of Water, and then I, Tonya.
I want to see that too.
And I watch all this stuff, you know.
and I'm torn on I, Tonya. Just like I don't get into like the way stuff is marketed, but having what's her face Margot Robbie on the red carpet like yucking it up with Tonya Harding, and I'm like, shouldn't we still be ostracizing her like for what she did? Like, not like, hey, look at the fun she's having on the red carpet. I don't know. That's just me.
I get you. It's she's a problematic figure, Todd. Like yes. We all are in our own special way.
That is true. So, but that's our Oscar coverage for the show.
And Logan is adapted screenplay.
That is really cool, though. That's much better than just sound editing.
Right, or like best visual effects or costume design or some nonsense like that.
Wig work or anything.
Oh,
like
boy.
That.
They're lucky Legend of Tomorrow is just a TV show.
Because they would have just swept at the Oscars right. For wig work and tiny hats.
All right, so it's somewhat comic related. We had to get it out of the way. What do we actually have to talk about comic news and so forth? What do we got on the show today, Todd?
That's right. In news, we have an update on the JLI omnibuses, replacements, which is, I think, apparently the roulette way to do it. I don't know. A creator wants to change the way you pre-order comics. Red Underwear are back. Where Dan Slott is going. And Doomsday Clock isn't going to quite be clockwork anymore. We also have con news, free digital books and sales, what we read last week, which was Killer Be Killed number 15 and Damage number 1, what we're looking forward to this week. I have an art attack. We have the mailbag and Flash spoiler filled talk of Flash. Flash is back, so we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Right. Sadly, did not get a chance to watch Black Lightning, but it's on the queue as well. I'm attempting to make a concerted effort to watch more stuff like this for the show.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Good for me. So let's get into a follow-up from a few weeks ago when we had discussed about the JLI omnibus that had come out. And there were some misprints in it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, in the second printings, they have fixed some of the misprints.
Right.
Not all of them. I guess some of the word balloons that were missing did not get filled in. Sadly, DC is not offering a replacement. And they're kind of leaving it into the hands of the retailer of how to decide to do those things. But another problem of it is, it's difficult to tell whether or not you're getting a first or a second printing from the UPC code.
Nothing has changed on the outside.
Right.
The only way to know is it says second printing inside, and obviously the stuff is fixed. But all the books are shipped shrink-wrapped. So I didn't know about this story. This story came across my desk when Joe sent me the show notes. I saw all the other news items that we're going to talk about, but somehow I missed this, JLI news. I don't know. But I'm like, oh, like show notes, JLI news. I'm going to find out what's going to happen to my, super expensive JLI omnibus. And this is garbage as far as I'm concerned. Like the way, like we don't know. You got to talk to your retailer about replacements. If we send you another one, they still probably have at Diamond some of them in like the warehouse. So if you order it again, what are my chances I'm getting a second print versus a first print? Then you got to rip it open to see because it's not on the outside. This is such a cluster. Like DC should like figure out how to fix this so I can get my thing. That being said, I also want to keep my error copy because.
Oh, that's right. Cause that'll be worth money.
It is like the old Sandman's like number 8 that was the, or whatever issues it were that they had the misprints and stuff like that. I want both, but I understand. I just wish they fixed this better. This is really bad for something I spent a lot of money on. So I'm a little hot by this story.
And I understand, and that's why, of course, I bring it up, not to make you hot, of course, but to keep you more aware of what's going on with this story. And you know me personally, whenever there's some sort of concern regarding DC's trade policy, what gets traded and how it gets traded and so forth, I always like to bring that up on the show, my Marvel or DC bias notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of biases and notwithstandings, of course, you'd mentioned... Greg Pak over the weekend kind of got on a little bit of a Twitter soapbox, essentially just saying that there needs to be a better way for people to pre-order comics. Mm-hmm. The gist of his thing is that so much of the world that we live in gets what they want essentially with one or two clicks. And Amazon. Diamond, you have to do your pre-orders. Essentially, the preferred Diamond way is to rip an order form out of the previews catalog, fill it out with what you want, get it to your retailer by a certain day, and hope that Diamond actually fulfills the order.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's got to be a better way, but unfortunately, in a print medium, that is very difficult to do. Now, if we were all online and everyone got their comics, all, you know, 100% of comic sales were done electronically through Comixology or whatever it was, then this would not be as difficult as a problem because you don't have to worry about things getting shorted or things going to second and third printings or things being sold out by the time you get to the store or a million other things. Unfortunately, while this print media exists in a week-to-week fashion, this is going to be a difficult thing to overcome.
I totally agree, and the fault doesn't just lie with the one-click ability. It lies with the fan who doesn't pre-order. You know, at times, I'm not saying it's all on the fan. It's on the retailers we have a good shop, Joe. We have a great shop that will pre-order pretty much anything you want as long, you know, and I say that, you know, with the exception of, oh, I want this one figure. Well, I have to buy a case. Do you know what I mean? Like that's completely different, but comics, they will get you anything. I've been to a lot of comic shops and heard a lot of horror stories. It's like, well, I want to pre-order this. And they're like, it's not worth my time. How is it not worth your time? You put it on your list. They send it to you. The customer buys it. You know, it is an antiquated system, but there are so many flaws along the way, and that's the problem. And like you said, I don't ever see it changing. I really don't. Until it's all digital, but then you won't have the brick and mortar shops anymore to do that. If it was all digital, it would just be, well, I can order whatever I want. There'd be no shortages. There'd be no second printings. So I don't know. I really don't know how you fix the thing other than maybe Diamond not having a monopoly on distributing books. Maybe that would change some stuff where, you know, retailers wouldn't mind risking stuff. If they had the ability, they'd have better deals. I don't know. I just think that there are some big problems that it's going to take bigger minds than mine or yours to overhaul ordering comics.
Well, you mentioned about it's on the onus of the person. There's too many moving parts with pre-ordering a comic book is the problem, right?
Right.
When it comes to any of the big books, and I'm going to say big books, your Marvel, your DC, your Dark Horse, your Image, and even your IDW and your Valiant, you know, whoever your top publishers are, right?
Mm-hmm.
For all intents and purposes, if I, the customer, want a book, I will go to my retailer and I will order it in the fashion in which your retailer sets those up. And I'm saying I as the general I and the retailer as your general retailer.
Mm-hmm. And I'm already
the retailer puts
with you,
that order in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It is now up to Diamond to actually deliver that book in one condition to the shop. Even further still, it is now up to the publisher to actually deliver that book on the date that they say that it's going to be delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an example, okay, and this is a little bit bigger of a ticket item than normal, a year ago, through Dark Horse, they're the publisher, and they do a lot of, like, weird specialty books like this from time to time, like collections of art or whatever, and then, like, boom, just recently, maybe about a little bit over a year ago, put out, like, an art or history of Big Trouble in Little China, right?
Like artist editions and stuff like that,
No. It's about the movie.
Okay, okay.
With a foreword by Kurt Russell. It's a hardcover, like, oversized thing. It's, like, all production notes and everything like that about Big Trouble in Little China, right?
Mm-hmm.
They solicit the book to come out on a certain day, and it missed the day by several months.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Horse, on the other hand, over a year ago, advanced solicited a similar book about a show that I like very much called The Venture Brothers.
Right.
Now, this is a book that has missed its ship date by last October. Mm-hmm. Not 3 months ago. 3 months ago in a year. Missed its ship date. It is in
2016.
It is in this month's preview re-solicited.
Mm-hmm.
The previous reorders have not been credited back. This is going to turn people off from wanting to pre-order books. Now, obviously, these are two very specific examples, but it does happen a lot of times on a smaller publisher where a book comes out late or gets canceled by the time, like, it's canceled by the time the first issue comes out. Right. Which is something that has happened even at the big two publishers.
All right, now I think we're talking two different things, though.
Well, I'm talking about the things that could deter people, fans, from pre-ordering stuff so that everyone gets whatever they want.
Right, I totally agree with what you're saying. But what I'm saying is what I think and Greg Pak is talking about is the monthly comics, which are completely different than a big hardcover collection or what, like your Venture Brother book or your Big Trouble in Little China, because these are things that, granted, are going to be at a comic shop, but also could probably be at a bookstore, and you can still get comics at bookstores. But comics, if you want, are pretty much a comic shop or ordering online. That's your next. So he's talking about probably supporting the creator and getting those books into the hands of the people before they become collections. Supporting the books so they'll last longer than, you know, people who are trade with it. I think that's more or less what he means. Is it making any sense with the way I'm going?
It does. And, you know, that is something that can be done, but it's not it's a band-aid to a gushing amount of blood.
I agree. And it's easier to pre-order. People are going to pre-order stuff from a comic shop through Diamond for $2.99 and $3.99 books. And I'm guessing your Venture Brothers / Kurt Russell books are slightly more expensive.
Yes.
Which where a retailer is going to be more hesitant to order, because now think about this. If I order that for you and that's a year later and that comes in, imagine the person who just ordered that and I got to call them a year and a half later for their book if it comes out.
Right.
That's
ridiculous. If it comes out.
If it does, I have to, I don't know how return, because comics are returnable if there's a certain, you know, like creator change before a cutoff date, that much I know. But with the books you're talking about, I don't know. So you might be stuck with them, and retailers don't want to order them because then I'm stuck with a $35 hardcover that I can't find this guy who, or, you know, I'm not getting it from my comic shop. I'll get it from Amazon or whatever because I see it there. You know what I mean? So, yes, there are huge multiple. It's a big machine with too many moving parts.
It's a good thought. Mm-hmm. Something needs to be done. And sad, and even still, the option of going all digital, that's even not 100% fail safe.
Why not?
Problems can happen there.
Yeah, but it's a little different because you're gonna cut out so many. If you go full digital, retailers are gone and Diamond is gone. So now it's up to me, and now, when I order it, why would you pre-order comics? Because they would just come out and I will buy them. Because there's people pre-order stuff now so they don't miss out on stuff because of short print runs. Maybe my retailer won't order it. And there will never, once it's made, all right, it could be late. The artist doesn't draw it. It's a month late. But when it does come out, it's there forever. So it's instant. I want Suicide Squad number 23. It's out already. Bing. It's in my whatever device I'm reading comics on. So a lot of the moving parts are gone once it's all digital.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my take on it.
Right. I don't know. It something needs to be done. I don't know what could be done. I just wanted to mention the story because I thought it would be an interesting discussion.
I thought it was.
Yes. Now, moving on in the news, in the I knew about it a week ago news story, because Todd stooged it off to me.
Mm-hmm.
In the big solicited Action Comics number 1000, which is more of like a hardcover collection, with a crazy lineup of creators on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's anyone who's still alive and has touched Superman, and yes. even some who have not, are doing work in this book.
Right. Whether there'll be pinups or whatever, you don't know, but there's a ton of names on this book. And I think it's only a $7.99 book, which is much better than what I thought it was. I don't know what it was in the thing, but it was less than I thought. Still might be a hardcover, but there are a ton of names in there. And one of them is they found an old Siegel and Schuster Superman story, I think, that's never been printed anywhere. So that should be interesting.
And unpublished art from Kurt Swan, but mm-hmm. also it's the first published work of Brian Michael Bendis at DC.
Right.
But more importantly, Todd.
What?
Superman's cuffs on his clothes look weird now. I don't like it.
Me either.
Or they've put him back in the red trunks.
The red, and they're not trunks. Dan Juergen says, when I see the red shorts, they're not pulled over the outfit. They're sewn like that. It's blue to the red to the blue again.
It's not a separate piece.
Right. That's the way it's one piece sewn together.
I agree. And
Dan Juergens would know.
Right. Dan Juergens, one of the perennial Superman artists, writers, creators of the 80s and 90s and even the nows.
That's right. He's actually drawing and writing Action Comics as we speak.
Mm-hmm. But, I guess this is a big deal. A lot of people are very happy about this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just happy because it's funny that it's such a big deal that they were taken away now that they're given back. Superman's trunks are the new Coke of comics.
Oh, boy.
Or the Coke so Classic. Taking them away was the new Coke. Bring them back is the Coke Classic.
So what you're saying is Dan Didio, it was trying to tank DC the way Coke was trying to, it was like, oh, we'll make more money bringing it back. It was all a big conspiracy theory?
I don't think that DC is that Machiavellian in their planning. But mm-hmm. I'll say yes, if it'll make them seem like bigger geniuses. Because again, of course, as always, I have to talk positively about DC whenever I can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that's what this show is.
That's right.
But yeah, it's just it's an interesting thing that it's part of the celebration of Action Comics 1000.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting it?
I probably will. I like Superman a lot. There's a lot of good people involved in it. It'll be pretty cool.
And since it's the first Brian Michael Bendis Superman, you'll probably be able to put Asa through college with it someday. Because it'll be expensive.
Especially if it's a hardcover, because they'll be sure to have misprints in it.
Oh, boy.
And those are what I'll be able to flip on the secondary market, baby.
Yes.
Oh, boy. So, speaking of Brian Michael Bendis, over at Marvel, his departure has caused much, I wouldn't want to say confusion, but a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors and innuendo about who's going to be taking over some of his books, and conspicuous by their absence in the April solicitations was Jessica Jones, which we do know is coming back with a new creative team, and Defenders, which I don't think is coming back, but they are touting his last issue of Iron Man is Upon Us, and who is going to be taking over Iron Man? None other than nearly 10-year-long scribe of Amazing Spider-Man, and 2 years of Superior Spider-Man in there as well, Dan Slott. Now, this is something that has been talked about as well for the better part of the last year, that Dan Slott was going to be leaving Amazing Spider-Man. Now, there's also a discussion of who's going to take over Amazing Spider-Man, but right now we know that Dan Slott is going over to Iron Man.
Yes. And I'm worried that he won't know how to write the character. Will he be able to write a superhero who's a genius, who owns a multi-million-dollar corporation, and possibly has a bodyguard that's a superhero that's his also secret identity? Where's he going to write that? Oh, wait, that's right. It was Spider-Man.
Are you alleging that he's been writing Iron Man the last 2 years in his Spider-Man book as prep for this run on Iron Man?
I'm not alleging it. I'm saying it straight out.
What if they just take those issues of Amazing Spider-Man and just repurpose Iron Man into them?
Just put crappy Iron Man stickers all over the book.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who takes over Amazing Spider-Man. It'll be interesting to see how Dan Slott kind of closes things out. And I'm one of the few people, I would say, that have been on board with Dan Slott's Amazing Spider-Man the entire time that he's been doing it. You know, some peaks and valleys, but as Todd is very eager to point out, that 2-year run of Superior Spider-Man is some of my favorite comic books of all time. And that really goes good. A long way to some stories that may not have been 100% up to par.
Wow, I can't believe all this positive Marvel talk from Joe today.
And I've been enjoying Iron Man, you know, for all of its, problems as well. The Superior Iron Man story that just kind of went away and never mentioned again. And Bendis's run on Iron Man felt more like he was telling stories of everyone else but Iron Man. But I think a lot of that had to do with what was going on in Civil War II, which in and of itself is an issue. I don't mean like an issue of a comic book. I just mean a concern. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Dan Slott does on Iron Man.
I agree.
And I think that's all we have in the news. So moving on to convention stuff.
Whoa, Joe, slow down. Wasn't there one more story?
Todd, again, listen. I've already got my quota of negative talk about DC in for the show.
Listen, we have to talk about this news story, Joe. Doomsday Clock.
All right. So, Doomsday Clock, to everyone's non-surprise except for me, is going to be late. Even so late as, the issue 3 is scheduled still for this week. Issue 4 is still scheduled for next month. But then it looks like it's going to take 2 months off. And then it's going to be 2 months off during all of the summer. So it'll be May, July, and September is when issues 5, 6, and 7 respectively are going to come out. Now, Geoff Johns hasn't said anything about it. DC hasn't said anything about it. But Gary Frank came out on Twitter and said that no one wants the book to miss shipping or have to cut back on the complexity. But I'm hoping that he can get enough of a cushion to switch back to monthly at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, this leads some sort of cushion. This is a book that we knew about for the better part of a year before it came out. Like, the July, like, I think we knew about it at the earliest, the prior July, at the latest, the April of this, like, of 2017.
Right.
So even at the latest, there was a 7-month lead time before the first issue came out.
Right.
This, again, leads to this theory that you and I have floated on this show, that this book was originally not supposed to be a year-long thing, that it was supposed to be just like a 4 or 5 issue miniseries.
Here's my take on it.
Okay.
That they've added, you know, that it's going to be late, and now they're probably going to have add an extra issue because Geoff Johns wrote a better ending.
Oh, come on now.
I have to use that joke. But let me check the PayPal. The DC check cleared. let me positive spin this story with my opinion so you don't have to do all the heavy lifting on pro DC talk. What I honestly think happened is there's a lot of that. I think this was the book was stretched from 4, 5, 6 issues to more. But what I think happened is whatever was supposed to spin out of this, because this book seems to be Superman-centric with the whole Oz slash, like whatever happened with Clark Kent's parents and whatever like Miss Dr. Manhattan might have done or more than that. I think whatever was supposed to happen after that is Brian Michael Bendis was supposed to write Superman at the end of it, and the universe was supposed to pick up after Doomsday Clock, and it was, hey, Brian Michael Bendis is doing Superman. I think him getting sick has pushed his writing back, if that makes any sense, and they maybe have to stretch this out now. That's my conspiracy theory.
Right, because I saw other people speculating that, like, oh, what's this going to do to other books? But really, so far, and again, we're only 2 issues in at this point, this is really only touching Superman and Batman, really.
Right, and maybe Flash because it was part of the button at some point, right. But I don't know.
So I like your theory that that's the reason why, and we don't even know yet. Maybe there's other books because we saw like a bunch of the Metal books were the books that spin on a Metal were supposed to be released starting in like November, December. from the original solicitations, and they just the first one of them just came out this past week in Damage, and now most of them are coming out in February.
Mm-hmm.
So were there delays with Metal that caused that to happen? Were there delays with some of those books that they needed the line to roll out in a certain order? Whereas with Doomsday Clock, I think your theory that Bendis's illness is putting back when he's supposed to start on Superman, so they have to hold off on Doomsday Clock finishing. Like, they right. can have they Doomsday Clock finish, and then, like, well, Brian Michael Bendis, like, what spins out of Doomsday Clock, written by Brian Michael Bendis, doesn't come out for another 3 to 4 months.
Right, it kind of takes away the striking while the iron's hot.
Right, it needs to be. Clock. Issue 12 of Doomsday Clock comes out in stores the same day whatever Brian Michael Bendis' Superman is.
Or the next week or whatever, like just...
It should like, be the same, honestly.
I'm just using that. Like, a week would be fine, but you can't have months or a month or whatever.
If
like,
DC was smart at this point, since they kind of control, you know, at this point, you know, they haven't announced it, but we're aware that there's going to be these delays. Find out when the closest that this is going to be done, Doomsday Clock, and find out when there's one of those five Wednesday months. And mm-hmm. have issue 12 of Doomsday Clock and whatever Bendis' first book is come out on that fifth week and be those the only two DC books that come out that month, that week.
Right.
So if you're a DC person, you have no excuse not to buy these books. Because
oh,
there's only two DC books that are out this week.
What if it gets pushed back to like that, like if next year's like that weird Christmas week? Where the only books that will be out will be like Doomsday Clock 12 and whatever Brian Michael Bendis project. Do you know what I'm talking about? Remember when they did that?
What was the one year where the only book that came out was like an issue of Blackest Night or something?
Right. And then there was like a couple of like they were like, oh, like we're Titan Comics. Let's get a Doctor Who out there. Like,
right.
So that was pretty much it. And all those books shipped the week before anyway.
Right. So they were sitting in the back room at your comic shop.
Right, so, but I'm hoping that they also, like I said, when they add that extra issue with the new ending that Geoff Johns created, that they add a whole bunch of one-shots that are pivotal to the plot and we have to read.
How so, dare you?
That's what I want.
Oh, you sicken me, Todd. Anyway, mm-hmm. Now can we move on to convention news?
Yes, now that, you know.
Pushing your agenda?
Oh, I am an agenda pusher.
So, there's a couple cons this weekend, nothing too crazy out of the ordinary. There's one called the STCE Comic Con in Laredo, Texas. There's some assorted vendors and whatnots there, but the only real big media guest there is John Wesley Shipp of both Flash TV shows, and I think that's all he's ever done in his career.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then in conjunction with Heroes Con, the same people who do Heroes Con are doing a Charlotte Mini Con, which I think this may be the first or second time that they've ever done this, where it's essentially Heroes Con, but smaller. Where okay. It's more local creators, nobody being flown in. The only big name creator that they have there is Al Milgram. And other than that, it's people within literally driving distance. Like for creators, and there's a lot of creators in that Carolinas, Virginia-y area.
Right. And if you get I think Al Milgram was the guy who did the covers on the recent KFC comics.
Oh, really? I know he's, you know, famously one of the creators of Firestorm, but.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's Al Milgram because it was all, I'm trying to remember who wrote them. And then our buddy of the show, Tom Durenick, but I know the covers were somebody else, and I think they were Al Milgram. But.
Interesting. So you can check out those links for those conventions in the show notes, just as well as the links for the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where all the people in our little network, anytime they put out a show, it'll go up on the site. I am doing better on getting those out on a much quicker basis, being that I was able to find some workarounds to be able to do it from my phone at work. With little to no fuss or muss. And this includes shows such as Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, of course, this show, After Dark, Longbox Heroes, of course, and there'll be more information about this week's Longbox Heroes After Dark a little bit later on, Podvocacy, and any other new shows that might be coming up in the network, or anytime anyone else shows up on any of the other shows or any other podcast anywhere else, as long as they remind me, I'll put it up on the site, and you can enjoy all the members of the Soon to Be Named Network on all the shows that they appear on. Breaking news here, I'm going to be on Puzzle Warriors 3 this week. I just got the Iggy while we were recording this.
Are you host now on that show or something?
I am the dishonorary fourth member of the show.
Are you going to jump ship and leave me like adrift in the ocean of podcasts?
No, I'm not. Okay. Somebody did, you know, obviously they've kind of, being the Puzzle Warriors 3, they've kind of taken their homage from the Warriors 3 from the Thor universe. And as an in-game rib, my friend James is a listener of this show and that show as well, did like a faux image for when I'm a guest on the show. You know, the infamous, it was kind of like an homage of the old X-Men cover where it's like, here's the old X-Men in the back from Giant Size X-Men number one, and then like the other characters are busting through. And they kind of always parody that when there's always something bad or somebody terrible showing up.
Right.
And it's the Warriors 3, and then I'm represented by Gwenpool on the image. I don't read the Gwenpool comic, not that it matters because Marvel is canceling it, but Gwenpool is a much maligned character in the game, and I am one of her few defenders.
Defending?
So that's my in-game character, a.k.a. the queen of the game.
Gotcha.
All that stuff will be over at soontobenamednetwork.com. Also in the show notes are all the digital sales and freebies. They've really been skimping on the freebies, but anytime anything that still exists, I have in our little links here. Some of the stuff that has been up for sale, of course, the Archie sale is still going on. Marvel is having a sale on stuff related to Legion, the Legion character, I guess, his TV show is coming back for a second season. It's a lot of his little things. Now, one thing that I would recommend to people just to check out is kind of an interesting little time capsule of the world. Legion Quest was a X-Men crossover that led to Age of Apocalypse. So if you're interested in that little piece of X-Men history, be sure to check that out. In that sale, DC is having a sale on Hawkman stuff. Viz is having a sale on Dragon Ball Z stuff. And Marvel is having a sale, for some reason, on Dan Slott-related stuff.
I wonder why.
And it's essentially all of the Spider-Man that he did and all of the Silver Surfer that he did. Again, I don't know why they don't come to me to curate these sales. You could have very easily put in there the collection of the She-Hulk run, the Thing run, the Spider-Man Human Torch miniseries that he did included in this, but hey, I don't make up these rules.
Right.
I wish I did. It would make everyone's life that much easier. And I do want to mention here, for $22, you could pick up the entire run of Superior Spider-Man. And that is 34 issues? 34 issues of a story at $22. That's way less than a dollar an issue. That's like 70s pricing on those. And I can't recommend that series enough, as mentioned earlier in the show.
Yes.
So, Todd, let's get into what we read from this past week. I will doff my cap to you and allow you to start with Damage number one.
That's right. DC's New Age of Heroes number one. And it says in here by storytellers Tony S. Daniel and Robert Venditti. So Robert Venditti, we know, is the writer of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, but also Tony S. Daniel's an artist. But he's also written for DC, so I'm wondering, like, they must be doing the writing chores together. And this is a story of a person who is being transported by the army somewhere, and we don't know what it is, and there's voices talking to the person, and it escapes. And is a giant, I'm going to use the word hulking character, who decides to go on a rampage through the city. And as we're going on, we're getting the idea that it's going to be this giant creature for an hour, but he's unstoppable, and someone tries to stop him in this armor, and this goes on. We get an idea of what has happened, that he was transformed into this, maybe by the military, and people are showing up to the this government group is trying to figure out where he went now that he's disappeared after the hour is up, and then Task Force X, which it normally goes by the Suicide Squad, shows up. So I'm guessing this is on one of those multiple Earths that is in the metal ongoing storyline. So I'm interested because we're not 100% sure if this is the regular DC universe or one of those metal planets. Obviously, because of Task Force X, I lean towards the metal Earths. But I thought this was interesting, a nice start to this character. We don't get much information. It looked really nice. The book looked beautiful. But I think this was overall just a good comic, not a great comic to kick off the new age of heroes, as in it doesn't explain much. It's just a fun story. But I more want to know how this ties into everything, and it doesn't give you any of that. So I have to say I enjoyed it. I didn't love it.
I'm with you. This felt, for the first book to come out of the New Age of Heroes stuff, very light.
Mm-hmm.
I liked some of the ideas here. I'm sure this could have very easily been pitched as, what if Our Man was the Hulk?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is an interesting thought and an interesting premise, but it didn't knock my socks off. Putting Task Force X, a.k.a. Suicide Squad, in there, I felt if you're going to put them in there, have them be a bigger part of the story. Now, right. I'm not reading the current Suicide Squad book, so I don't know how close to the team that's being represented here is the team that's currently in the book, because I know, essentially, it could really be anyone on the team.
Right.
But usually there's at least, like, four or five or whatever, like, three or four or five core members, and then different people come in at different points.
Right. And looking at the team, and I read Suicide Squad, there are the one or two. There's the Deadshot and Harley Quinn, but the rest look completely different, and they're calling them Task Force X instead of Suicide Squad. So this makes me think this isn't our Earth Suicide Squad. I really do. I think this is going to be one of those weird, entropy metal Earths that's on the the dark multiverse or something. Like I said, I don't think there was enough questions answered in this.
Right.
For what they're starting off with, if that makes any sense.
I agree. There should have been like a primer book that came out, maybe like a little 6 to 8 pager of each of these characters that were going to be in this, maybe like a freebie that they hand out at the comic shops or something. I don't know. But like I said, this is not a great way to kick off the Age of Heroes. I understand DC does have a plan for this. I saw some sort of thing on DC site that they're going to actually be doing like 30-second commercials about it.
I've already seen one or two like in the background. I haven't gotten a chance to watch them.
Oh, okay.
But I did see New Age of Heroes commercials. I heard it. Like I was in the other room doing something. And I was like, oh, come running in, and I missed it. So they've started already.
I'm sure I could see them if I really wanted to on the old YouTubes.
YouTube has stuff like that?
It certainly does.
Mm.
You could even find your favorite song on YouTube if you have a favorite song.
From the 80s, even.
Yes. So, my book that I was most looking forward to coming out this week is Kill or Be Killed, number 15, written by Ed Brubaker with art by Sean Phillips. We start the movie, or the movie, listen to me, movie. Oh boy. It was optioned to be a movie, so maybe that's why it's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan is in a mental institution. It's even so on the cover of the book. If that's not an eye-capturing cover of what's going on in this book, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a lot of the storytelling in this is done and has been done in a masterful way by Ed Brubaker, as you can always expect from him. We start off with Dylan in the mental asylum, and we find out how he got in there. So if you've been a listener of the show since this book has come out, we do talk about probably every issue that has come out. We may have missed one or two here or there, but this is a jumping on point for the beginning of a new storyline. So the quick synopsis of this is Dylan was being told by a demon that only he could see that whatever was wrong with him would not kill him as long as he killed one person a month. And it started off that Dylan was doing his due diligence, looking up to find bad people to kill, people that would not be missed, people who have done horrible things. But things got worse and worse for Dylan, and the kills became more and more, and there was a lot of close calls with the cops. So we later learn that he was prescribed a medication that he either wasn't taking or that was expired, and there's been a lot of speculation of whether or not this demon is real or just a figment of his imagination. We learned in issue 14 that this demon, this thing, which was also in a lot of the imagery and the art that his father did, who was a cartoonist, comic book artist, whatever, that his brother who passed away also saw this thing as well. So now it's starting to be led to believe that this is something with his family. It's hereditary. This demon or this curse or whatever it is following the family.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan tells all of this, and he's in group in the asylum, and he tells them this. He admits what has been going on, that he has been the Red Mask killer. And then the book ends in a cliffhanger that I saw coming, but I was no less surprised to see the words on the printed page.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite books. I love this book so much. I can't think off the top. I would really have to dig deep to find a book by Ed Brubaker that I did not absolutely love, and this is just another one. I cannot recommend this book enough, and with this being a jumping on point, this is a great issue to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
How's by you, Todd?
I really enjoyed this issue. I will, agree with all the sentiments there. I did not see the ending, the cliffhanger coming, the words on the page, as you say. That kind of took me, but now I still want to read where it's going. But this issue did change my opinion on whether or not the demon is real or not.
Okay.
And this is my, obviously I don't have any of the future issues in front of me. This is my, my theory on what is going on is that the demon is in his head now. I was up to this point going, it was real, but my theory is that the brother saw the demon and the demon was inside him. Like he had a legitimate, like mental issue and he told the father about it. And the brother, the father drew it and, like used him in his stories, his sci-fi stories. And now the brother saw those things, kind of knew about it, but suppressed it all. And it's all coming back now that it's, like he had repressed memories of it. And like, cause there's a moment when he ends up attacking the demon, but he attacks somebody in real life. Like, to me, that's starting to blend the whole, like, hallucination affecting what you see. And I have no, reason to believe that my theory is correct, but that's the way I'm going now. I flopped to this completely different side, and I think, to me, that's just a good, like, the abilities, the storytelling abilities of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips to me.
So, I will say, I still don't know for sure.
Oh, I don't know for sure, but that's my new theory.
Because I think there are clues in the book that would lead you to believe really any theory at this point.
Exactly.
And that's the best thing about this book. Where
we'll
in
never
one
know.
Issue they come right out and tell you that the answer is A, even though clues will lead you to believe that it's B, but now they tell you that it's C. Well, a couple issues mm-hmm. later, they tell you that it's really B, even though they really hammer home a lot of clues that it really is C.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, just the nuances of this book, and we can get into so much more about the book, and there's only so much I could say, but you really have to see this book.
Mm-hmm.
To understand how good it is. Like, the art is beautiful, the way that the art matches up with the storytelling and all of that. Again, great book, one of my favorite books currently being published today.
Love the design on the demon, too. That is fantastic.
Yes.
the way like the face will show up in the panel and everything. It's creepy. It's disturbing at times. I like it. So yes, I'm a Killer Be Killed fan too. So
that's what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned and be forearmed, know what's coming out, be ready, pre-order your books if you have to. If you need help, just ask, and I will help you pre-order your books. So Todd and I attempt, as we always do every year, attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this year and keep a running tally of such. Speaking of running tallies, we're also keeping a running tally of how much we have spent on comics at the comic shop this year, excluding storage materials.
Oh, God, don't even start me up, Joe.
Todd has a slight lead over me, but all it takes is one annual that I'm getting that Todd's not to even that up.
Come on, absolutes.
So, Todd, you started the show. Go for it.
Right. And also, I'm regretting this already because I'm looking at that tally and I'm only just about 1 month in. Ugh. But I'm looking over your list, and is the book you're looking forward to most Southern Bastards number 19 coming back?
It is Southern Bastards number 19, yes. Perennially, as I mentioned before, about Kill or Be Killed being my favorite regularly put out book, Southern Bastards is probably my favorite irregularly put out book.
Mm.
You, Todd, on the other hand, looking at your list of things...
Right.
I'm going to guess that the book you are most looking forward to come, and this is going to be a tough one because there's a lot of good stuff this week.
Right.
Thanos number 15.
You got it, baby.
Bingo, bango, sugar in the gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be careful with spoilers, everybody. This is the issue where they reveal who the Ghost Rider who is alongside Old Man Thanos is.
Right, Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Cosmic Ghost Rider. And apparently it's a big deal. People were abuzz on the old internets and the social medias yesterday. Bunch of stooges. Keep your mouth shut. Don't you know I haven't read the book yet?
I'm doing radio silence on Twitter and social media all from here on out.
Good.
Till I get my books today.
I'm glad. But that's another book that looks good. Marvel 2-in-1 number 2, of course. Doomsday Clock number 3, as mentioned before. Again, it's a big week of books. I'm very excited for all the stuff that's coming out. And I'm sure we'll be talking about at least one or two or three of those books, as mentioned.
Right.
Now, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that we have there. Everything that Todd and I have ever done related to the show exists over at longboxheroes.com, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, past poll posts, Todd and Joe Have Issues, anything else that we've ever done before exists over there, as does the little button for our store, where you could purchase stickers or t-shirts with our fancy logo on it from the aforementioned official KFC artist at DC, Tom Durinick. We actually had another shirt purchased this week, and I did make the deal with people who purchased a shirt from us, that if you purchase a shirt from us, I will give you a phone call to thank you for purchasing the shirt, scooping up some of that warmth, if you will, from the second biggest pop on Monday Night Raw this past week, behind Cold Stone Johnny Austin.
Sound like me now, you're stealing my bits.
Right. So you have to include your phone number in the PayPal order for me to actually have your phone number to call you. I will gladly send you an email to thank you, but I don't have the world's phone numbers in my Rolodex. I don't have a Rolodex anymore.
I figured
still
you
keep
had all
the shirts.
That's right.
It confuses Todd every time you do.
Not anymore. I figured it out, Joe. If you read the things you send me, I know what they are.
And not no more, don't.
That's right.
But if you don't want a shirt, you already have a shirt. You don't want stickers, and if you don't want stickers, then fooey on you, I say. You could purchase pretty much anything else in the world, except, I learned, Todd, children's Valentine's Day cards.
What? Why not?
Because, for some reason on Amazon, if you, you know, you go to the store, you go to your grocery store, your, you know, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's Valentine's Day season. They have, like, the things where it's, like, the kids' Valentines. It's four to a sheet. You rip them up. You put them in the envelopes. You give them to your friends in elementary school, right?
Right. I choose you.
Right. And it has a picture of a bee on it.
Right.
If you try to search those out on Amazon, you will find people who have done custom ones, which are very expensive. And mm-hmm. you will also find vintage ones that are people that third-party sellers are selling. You cannot find, like, the cheapo ones that you could just get at the store. Mm. Which is forcing me to actually leave my house and go to a store to get them for my kid for his Valentine's at school.
What kind do you want? I'll stop and get them at my grocery store and bring them to the comic
shop. Okay.
I'll save you some heartache.
One of these three.
Mm-hmm.
Minecraft.
Super Mario.
Or Pokemon.
Detective Pokemon.
No, not Detective Pokemon. That's not allowed in this house.
Or anything with the old double R. Got it.
They have Deadpool Valentine's Day cards on plots.
Ugh.
Anyway, can't get them on Amazon, but pretty much anything else that you can get. Just like some of the purchases that we had through our link this past week, someone purchased Dragon Ball Fighters, and that's Fighters with a Z, for the PlayStation 4. Someone also purchased Bellagio Italia Brown Leather Disc Storage Binders for Ooh. Video games or CDs or DVDs or whatever it is. I think we had a similar purchase to that a few months ago, and I think this is just that same person buying more. And for that, I thank you again.
That's right. Buy more.
Someone also purchased the CDs of something called Splendor and Misery and something called, and again, I don't know the pronunciation of it. It's CLPPNG. It's by the same artist because it's like, oh, buy the two together, but it's not clear of who the artist is. So if you purchase that, please let me know what that is.
Okay.
And someone also purchased a book called I Must Say, My Life as a Humble Comedy Legend. Written by one of the ice creams.
Martin Short?
Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you everyone for your purchases through our Amazon click-through this past week. Todd, did we have any art attacks this week?
Yes, we did. Euronymous, who's becoming a art attack regular, sent in, which I think is a Sweet Tooth sketch card by Jason Keith Phillips, who I don't know if they're a famous artist that I'm missing or if they're just like somebody he picked up at a show, you know, that not everybody's, you know, these big superstars like Diodato and everything. So, but it's very nice, but it's Sweet Tooth, who was a Jeff Lemire character, who's a, you know, a good friend of the show.
I would say he's officially a friend of the show at this point, whether he wants to be or not.
That's right. I think in the documents he signed to be on the show, we're allowed to say that.
Right. And we did have a great interview with him last week. If you missed it, be sure to go check that out. I thought it was a really good interview.
Mm-hmm.
I must say.
Ooh, that sounds like something Martin Short would say.
Yes.
The ice creams. Yes, I must say.
Right. So we did have a bunch of stuff in the mailbag coming through to us on the email. You could email us any comments or remarks or anything that you'd like us to discuss. At longboxheroes@gmail.com or just comment in the post for the show that goes up at Longbox Heroes. We did have a couple, as I mentioned. One from Jason Rose, a longtime listener of the show. He had specifically mentioned how the most recent issue of Tom King's Batman seemed very similar to an issue of Action Comics by Joe Kelly, where Superman and Wonder Woman are stuck in an alternate dimension fighting monsters for 1,000 years. They even have a part where Superman's vows are tested by the wiles of Wonder Woman. Now, he mentioned that he found this very distracting. On the other hand, I will say, being a Joe Kelly fan, I was aware of this as well, and I think Tom King even got ahead of this, stating that he had never read the story himself, and no one at editorial at DC tipped him off that this was a story that was already done before.
Right.
So I can understand how it could be distracted if you were a Joe Kelly fan, and I do appreciate all you Joe Kelly fans out there. And yeah, it was definitely interesting to me that they allowed this faux pas to slip through. And it's not like this is a story from like the 60s and like an homage to that story. Like, this is a story that's less than 15 years old, like maybe less than 10 years old.
And here's my take on it. I get that it would take you out of it. And me and Joe here being a, you know, longtime readers of comics, that happens to me a lot too. I'm like, oh, this story definitely reminds me of this story. You can see where somebody's just lifting from other stories. I remember there was a Green Lantern story years ago, I think it was John Stewart, which was pretty much the final episode of MASH. They stole something right from that. And I'm like, okay, like that's, was the most watched TV show of all time up to this point. So I like how people are going to miss that. But to me, I've never read that Joe Kelly story. Mm-hmm. So like the old NBC slogan, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. So that's the way I look at it. And I see a lot of this stuff is, it all depends on whether you've seen it, whether you know it, because comics, you know, there's a lot of repetition. Like I said, I've seen a lot of the comic stories retold even better or even worse. So like I said, I found out that this was, you know, a thing before I read it, and going in, it kind of tainted the little thing. Cause I'm like, oh man, is this exactly like that? I'm not sure. I never read it, but I could see how someone would be taken out of a issue because of similarities.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for your letter, Jason. Another letter that we got this week from aforementioned frequent contributor to the show, Euronymous. He had mentioned how he really likes Batwoman, one of his new favorite characters in DC, but he only finds himself liking the Batwoman stories that were penned by Greg Rucka, essentially her creator. Mm-hmm. And whenever he tries something new that she's in, not written by him, he doesn't like it as much. He wonders on, you know, is this something that happens quite a bit? How does this happen? You know, why does someone like Neil Gaiman get to be the only one to write Sandman and the Endless characters? James Robinson, essentially, with Starman, that specifically Jack Knight Starman. And, you know, I guess feelings on when these characters end up in other books written by other people.
That's a good question, because I've chatted about this with people at the comic shop too. And the question, like, I'm going to do it fast, but a little bit, like, how does someone like Neil Gaiman get to be the only one who writes Sandman? Because DC doesn't want to tick him off, because people might forget, before Walking Dead was a thing, those top 10 selling trade paperbacks or hardcovers were always Sandman. So he made them a ton of money. So Sandman written by Neil Gaiman is going to make more money for DC than Sandman characters written by anybody else. And they know it. And until that train runs its course and Neil's like, I'm never doing it again, or something happens to him, then that'll happen. With James Robinson, there's a loyalty there. I do believe, and I even remember reading it in the letters pages and stuff, is Archie Goodwin was a believer in that book, and Archie Goodwin got that book off the ground, and he was loyal to James Robinson, and it was winning awards. And then once he passed away, Archie Goodwin, pronouns pal, he passed away. The people there were like, let it keep going because it's winning accolades and awards. So that happened. And then once it was like that, people were like, well, we really don't want anybody else but Robinson. So it seems like once you get a cult following, or you make a lot of money or win awards, that's what makes a character yours. And it's hard to shake. And it's going to be something like that with Brian Michael Bendis when he leaves Jessica Jones. It is going to be tough for me to see a book, Jessica Jones book, written by anybody else. Those are big shoes to fill.
Right, and it feels as though this is something that happens more at DC than Marvel, where a specific creator gets associated with a specific character.
Mm-hmm.
And these instances that we mentioned here, both with Sandman and both with Starman, these were happening at different times, late 80s into the early 90s with Sandman, and then, you know, mid to late 90s with Starman. And each of those different points in time, DC was a different company.
Mm-hmm.
So things were handled a little bit different in those respects.
A smarter company, if you will, I think, when it comes to this stuff.
Okay, whereas on the flip side, Greg Rucka, it was around, I would say, like the mid-2000s, like 2005, 2006. It was with 52.
Right.
Where Batwoman became a character that he had created. But the problem is, as much as I like Greg Rucka, Greg Rucka is a creator who is not afraid to open his mouth.
I see where you're going.
Yep. And as good as his stories with Batwoman is and are, that run on Detective Comics that he did that introduced the character, and then the little bit that he did after he left the book, as good as they were, DC has to look at these sales numbers and awards and everything. It won a bunch of awards as well. It was critically acclaimed and everything like that. But Greg Rucka doesn't play ball all the time.
Yep, he does what he wants to do.
Right, and he's, sadly, not Neil Gaiman early 90s. He's not James Robinson late 90s. He's Greg Rucka, which is still a big thing. DC fights for him to come back all the time, and all the time he ends up leaving. Because they can right. never see eye to eye.
And it is the time, like you said, Greg Rucka is... This is when corporate was starting to creep in. You know what I mean? Like, to make changes. There is money to be made here in the properties that we have. And I think that changed a lot of it. I think once Warner Brothers got a hold of DC proper and realized what they had, and Disney got Marvel and they started making the movies, all bets were off. Loyalty goes, you know, still there, but it goes out the window now because there's so much money involved.
Hopefully that answers some of your question there, Euronymous. And again, thank you everyone who contributed, sent something into the mailbag. And I do want to give a special mention to Kevin Hellions, a long, long time ultra mega power listener of the show. He sent in quite a conversation, discussion, etc. in regards to the movie that we are going to watch for this upcoming week's Longbox Heroes After Dark, the soon-to-be-named movie club. Is what he called it. I say club as good as project.
Or gimmick.
He wrote quite a bit of his feelings of watching the movie and his thoughts on the movie. And I'll say this to you, Kevin. When the episode goes up of After Dark, it's up to you if you would like to share these thoughts with our listeners. Because, again, it's too much for us to read the whole thing on the show here. But I definitely think you made a ton of good points in regards to what you said. But obviously you'll get my thoughts on the movie when After Dark comes out later this week.
And I think we do touch on some things that you mentioned in here
mm-hmm.
and other things because we were having an interesting discussion, get lost. But I actually really enjoyed this email that you sent to me about one of my favorite movies. So thank you very much.
And again, that's longboxheroes@gmail.com or just leave comments in the show notes for this show, After Dark, whatever it is, and we'll get to them and we'll talk about them here on the air. Now, the last bit of business, of course, is going to be the Return of the Flash, Trial of the Flash, Episode 10 of Season 4. If you did not watch it, you don't want to have it spoiled, whatever it is, we bid you adieu. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll catch you next week, Episode 328. Is in the can for you, but is going to continue for everyone else here in just a matter of seconds. All right, so we're back. Barry is in jail. Barry is on trial, which happened. The trial happened very quickly.
Well, that was because they had no defense. He even said, she's like, what defense do you want me to do? And he's like, well, we can't. The only defense I have is that you're the Flash. I won't do that. Then we have no witnesses.
Mm-hmm. So, they have Joe and Dibny out trying to dig up some dirt on, what is it, Marlies?
The DeVoe's
wife.
Right.
And they see her macking on another guy, at least as far as they know, but we know, the watcher of the show, that that is the new body that DeVoe is in.
Well, even Flash knew it at the time.
Right.
Right.
So, while this is going on, yet another one of the people that DeVoe created when he did the wormhole thing at the beginning of the season, and this is Flash villain Fallout, who is poisoning and irradiating all of Central City because, you know, that's his power, to be radiation poison.
Right, he doesn't know that he even has it, and he's innocently hurting people.
Mm-hmm. So, I like the episode, I'm glad to have the flashback, but this was a frustrating episode.
I agree.
Because I understand that Barry is keeping his identity a secret to protect those close to him and the ones that he loves.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, let it go. Everyone else, for the most part, could defend themselves, have superpowers or some sort of protection system set up that everyone will be fine. You've built this unit, this family, that everyone can kind of protect each other, that you don't have to worry about this attack. You're already being attacked all the time. What's like two more people attacking you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just tell everyone that you're the Flash. So much will be fixed. And then, in the middle of the trial, he gets up and leaves because the rest of the crew can't handle Fallout. He leaves. The Flash shows up, defeats the villain, and then comes back. Barry leaves. The Flash shows up. Why doesn't everyone else see it?
Because it's a big city, Joe.
Everyone's stupid in this episode, except for the thing.
No, see, I will disagree on that. That never bothered me about secret identity stuff. Because, like I said, literally he gets up and leaves, but, like, you're not going to put two and two together that he's the Flash when you have a city of 2 million people. That's where he went. He's definitely the Flash. I have no problem with that. My biggest problem with the episode is once we've lost the actor who played DeVoe before, and this new guy has no cachet as a villain. He's very monotone, very bland, very boring. And I thought the actor who played DeVoe before was great. I just do not even care about DeVoe anymore. When he shows up, I'm like, act much? Like, how about we, you know, show some menace, anything. But that being said, all that went on. And the other thing was the new power that Flash has. I'm not sure if he stops time or if he's speeds other people up. I want to find out about that. The scene when Iris is going to out him as the Flash, and he does something. I want to see what that power is. But I think the key to this episode is the Ralph Dibny stopping Joe West from planting evidence. I was blown away by that scene where Ralph just runs down. He's like, what has happened to him? Because he planted evidence. But he's like, go ahead. And he just opens the door for him and walks away. I was like, wow, that is character development for the elongated man as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. I like that they're not leaving him as a one-note character.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to give him a little depth, if you will.
Right.
And I'm excited about that, and I guess this week's episode is going to be a more Ralph episode, so I'm also looking forward to that as well.
Right. I'm wondering if this is when he loses his secret identity.
That would be interesting.
Because
to kind of show Barry that, you know, he could lose. Now, obviously, he doesn't have the same
mentality.
Well, not even mentality. He doesn't have the same relationships. He doesn't have a fiance and like all this other stuff. He's kind of the new guy in town, so he has a little bit less to lose.
Right, and they've already established when he's talking to Joe, he's like, I've lost everybody in my life because of what I've done.
Right.
And then I became a jerk afterwards. So there literally is no one to protect.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It'll be very interesting. So again, not a great episode of The Flash because there was some flaws in it. Again, you make a great point about the new actor as DeVoe. We'll see where it goes from here. I have faith in the show. I've enjoyed the show, you know, here now for 3.5 seasons. You know, I still like it very much.
I'm having the most, other than this episode, I'm having the most fun with Flash I've had since the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, so far, even though this is a bit of a clunker of an episode, it goes season one, season four, season two, season three. That's my, you know what I mean?
That's not a bad shuffle in there.
Right. That's my order of how good the show is.
And I guess that's everything.
Yeah, like you said, we didn't watch Black Lightning, and there was nothing else because we're done with blah, blah, blah. We're done with Punisher because now we're watching the DC shows are going to start coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's everything.
All right, everyone. So thanks for listening to Longbox Heroes, episode 328. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.